Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
He takes the snap. Barkley to his left through the hole. 35, 40. There goes Barkley. 50, 35, 25, 15, 10, 5. Touchdown. Mr. Electricity lights it up at Beaver Stadium tonight. Back goes O'Korn. Pressure steps up. Down he goes. Back of the 22-yard line. Curtis Cuthran. Sorley. Pitch to Barkley to the edge. To the 15. Barkley to the 10. The 5. Touchdown. Penn State. The Nittany Lions go 78 yards. McSorley. Quarterback draw. McSorley. Touchdown. Penn State. And the Nittany Lions with a clutch 2-minute drill. McSorley will keep it. To his left. Slides to the 10. Now to the outside. To the 5. Breaks a tackle to the far corner. Dives. He's got it. Touchdown. Penn State. Back goes McSorley. Long and deep, far side. Barkley reaches out and juggles. Got it. Touchdown. Penn State. And 110,853 love it. The Valley isn't just happy tonight. It is ecstatic.
First of all, I want to thank, you know, the entire Penn State community. I mean, the environment in there tonight was electric, and we fed off of it. Great win on a national stage. To showcase what an unbelievable university we have. So that win was for everybody.
Good afternoon, everybody. 110,853 at Beaver Stadium in Happy Valley on Saturday. We're elated. I'm going to guess that the majority were Penn State fans. I don't think a Michigan fan would dare walk into Beaver Stadium on a whiteout night of all nights. Before we get into any of that, Steve Jones, he's on his way into the Sunbury Motors studio momentarily. Sunbury Motors, Ford Lincoln Hyundai, the North 4th Street Auto Plaza in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, Route 11 and 15 Hummel's Wharf. If you want to reach out to the show, the phone number here is 1-800-795-9565. That's 1-800-795-9565. Those are the digits. If you want to talk about what happened, the just pure dismantling of the Michigan Wolverines on Saturday night. You can also reach the show. Oh.
Good win.
Oh, good win. Good? That's an understatement.
Well, it's amazing how you have to go to the next one, though.
Well, yeah.
It's a little different last year when they beat Ohio State. The next game was at Purdue. You're like, okay, fine.
Right, you could take a breath, right?
You don't need your A game for that one. Well, guess what? You need your A game again.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But I heard over the weekend, the immediate analysis was before the game was that, you know, Penn State should have been behind Georgia because of strength of schedule and et cetera, et cetera. And now Penn State's firmly number two. So that win definitely opened a lot of eyes.
Well, I don't think it really matters, to be honest with you, if you're two or three. I could care less. All two or three means is what color uniform you wear.
Right, right. But I think the point was is that I think Penn State, like, not if they haven't arrived already, this was it. This was the coming out weekend for them.
Well, they got to do it all over again.
They sure do.
All over again.
On the road, no less.
That's fine. No qualms with that. Doesn't bother me where the game is. No. It really doesn't. Doesn't bother me.
Apparently it doesn't bother them either.
Yeah. If you're good, which I think they are, you can go there. You can handle it. So I've never had any qualms. Oh, I can't believe you're going in there. Why?
Right.
Okay. Well, you want a Hoosiers moment? You know, you want to take a tape measure out? Look, hey, it's 100 yards. How about that? So's our place.
Well, champions win games in that scenario. That's what this is the measure. You want to talk about taking out a measuring stick? This is the measuring stick. This is it.
All right. So what the heck? It's a great win. I think that when you look at how they played, they got the lead, which against a team like Michigan is really important. You've got to play with the lead in a game like that. A team that has a really good defense, how you get them out of what they really want to do is to get the lead and then force them into a comfort zone that they're not used to. And that then becomes a problem for Michigan. Penn State made big plays. They rang up 506 yards on offense. Let me give you, excuse me, a small play that many people would have forgotten about the game, but I think told you a lot about the game. And that was when Penn State finally had to punt. They had to punt out of their own end zone. And something that works to Michigan's favor is if they have a short field. And Blake Gilligan ripped off a 58-yard punt. And suddenly Michigan was back at their own 32-yard line instead of being at midfield. Something like that becomes, believe it or not, really demoralizing for Michigan. You have expectations you're going to get the ball at midfield. You got some momentum. The field's shorter, the whole thing. All of a sudden you're back at your 32, 33-yard line. Like, oh, great, we got another long field in front of us again. So, any small play, big play. And that's how it played out. Now, today's show will include Joe Susan, talk Bucknell football at 3:35, Sean McDonough, 4:06, Matt Leon, at 4:35. Because we've got Eagles and Redskins coming up tonight. So we got a lot going on.
A lot of people are saying this is the best. The next weekend coming up might be the best single two-day period of sporting activity of the year. Between Ohio State, Penn State, a bunch of other rivalry college games, three and four of the World Series, NFL games galore. If you want to get into the middling things like the NBA and the NHL are going, it's crazy. You got a lot to watch.
It's a lot of fun.
Yes.
Well, it's the best. Who knows? That's a matter of opinion. So,
well, it really depends what sport you like, I guess.
I have no opinion on it. Just, you know, I know where I'm going to be.
So. Your plans are made.
My plans are set. I'm on a plane Friday, and I'm doing a game and on a plane coming back. So, yeah. All right, we'll take a break. Come back. Ben Jones, StateCollege.com. His thoughts on the game in a moment here on ESPN, on News Radio 1070 WKOK. So he's now announcing burglaries? What? I thought he did games. There's a getaway car. They saw what I saw. Okay.
They saw what I saw. Now he's being hunted.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Ben Jones, StateCollege.com, covered the game the other night. Ben, welcome. Great to have you with us.
Hey, Steve. Thanks for having me.
What were your thoughts watching it play out Saturday night?
You know, I think we knew that this Penn State team existed because we watched last season, and so much of 2016 was this explosive offense that could throw the ball over the field and score a lot of points, and it didn't matter who they were playing or really the situation. And, you know, Penn State scored a lot of points this year, but it hasn't necessarily always been as flashy and to a certain extent as it was last year. But we knew with all of this cast of characters coming back with a lot of the same guys on offense in particular that this could happen. I didn't think it would happen, and I don't think anyone really thought it would happen. But, you know, Penn State's been a good team the past couple of weeks about getting that first punch in. And after that, you know, the Penn State defense, which I think was a little irked by the fact that everyone was talking about Michigan all week, you know, came out and pitched the usual, for all intents and purposes, the shutout kind of, you know, effort that they've had for the past few weeks to really round out this team. So I think everybody thought that this Penn State team existed, but yeah, I don't know if I expected it to show up quite in the way that it did on Saturday, but certainly, you know, Penn State's the best team in the Big Ten, and they showed it on Saturday. We'll find out how true that is next Saturday, but for right now, I don't think anybody's arguing that fact.
How well did the offensive line play, in your opinion?
You know, I was talking to people around me before the game, and we were trying to figure out what the number would be in terms of how many times Trace could get sacked and Penn State could still win. Not because the offensive line was necessarily playing poorly, but more just because that defensive front is so good for Michigan. The fact that he only got sacked twice is pretty remarkable, and it says a lot about their ability to pick up those pressures, especially because Michigan is so aggressive and Michigan brings, you know, you can kind of see them running up to the line as the snap is coming. So their ability to pick up all of those guys, and, you know, you figure that any game like that, you know, Tracy's going to get sacked a couple times, and really, you know, you can't say enough good things about how that offensive line played, you know, in the pass protection and, you know, for the running, because I think, you know, Saquon was able to get some more traditional yards on Saturday he has been able to do in the past, and I think a lot of that, you know, obviously comes down to the blocking as much as it comes down to his sometimes, you know, otherworldly abilities.
For me, an under-the-radar moment in the game, and he only punted twice in the game, but when Gilligan got that 57-58-yard punt off and changed field position to an offense that needs a short field, to me, Ben, and I don't know if there's much of a question here, but I thought that was actually a big early moment in the game.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, Penn State, a big part of that equation for winning the past, you know, 2 years has been the ability to win that field position battle. And they work with a shorter field. They make sure their opponents work with a longer field. And you go back to that game last year in Ann Arbor. It was either Penn State's first or second possession. Blake Gilligan punted it, you know, just about as far out of Penn State's own end zone when they were in Ann Arbor. Jabril Peppers had a really good return, but that punt ended up being like 55 yards or so. So right. He has been a guy, you know, I mean, we don't have to go back to last year to find his last good punt, but I think, you know, the fact that we don't talk about Blake Gilligan is much like how we don't talk about Grant Haley, because, you know, they're guys that are going out and doing their job, and really the only time that you notice the punter is when they're messing up. And I think, you know, Blake Gilligan, there's no doubt that he's as big of a part of Penn State's success this year and last year as anybody else on that team.
Something that I can get a gauge on it visually, believe it or not, in terms of sound, I don't have as much of a gauge on this as the rest of you, because by wearing headsets and doing the game, I have it blocked out in a lot of ways. What was it like for you to sit there and actually listen and watch actually the crowd?
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm a sucker for good crowds, and I'm always disappointed when, you know, we're on the road and the press box, wherever it might be, has the full glass front and you can't really,
right,
you know, get that crowd noise in. And I think it's great that Beaver Stadium, for all of its somewhat antiquated nuts and bolts on the inside, has those windows that open to hear that crowd. You know, I wasn't at the 2005 game against Ohio State. I wasn't at 2001 against Nebraska. Mm-hmm. And those have always been sort of the crowd high water marks. Maybe Notre Dame, you know, the first, you know, full stadium whiteout. But I think that crowd, you know, is juiced up and ready to go and as loud as, you know, as I've ever heard it. And I think, you know, honestly, I don't know if I remember the last time that Beaver Stadium was that full that early and stayed that full that long. I think everybody used to kind of seeing a couple thousand people go, I want to beat the traffic. And even with a game that, for all intents and purposes, was over, everybody just about stayed and got there early. So, you know, that crowd lived up to its hype. It always does, but I think, you know, in particular this past weekend, it was it brought a little something else to the table.
As James Franklin said, there wasn't a lot of time to sit back, kick back, and really enjoy it. It's not Purdue this week. After the Ohio State game last year, it was Purdue out in West Lafayette, and you felt that they were in a really good spot going out there. This is different. You go from Michigan and the emotion of that to playing at Ohio State. What are your initial thoughts?
You know, I understand why Ohio State's a favorite, and I don't think that there's anything wrong with that. I think the biggest compliment that you can give this game is the fact that you could tell me you picked Penn State, or you could tell me that you picked Ohio State, and I would say that would make sense. I think Penn State kind of proved this past weekend that they are maybe more capable against better teams than they had proven up until this point. Obviously, they had some good wins in there and whatnot, but to be able to do that against Michigan's defense, I don't think Ohio State's defense is nearly as good as it's been the past few years. It's hard to say how good the offense really is for Ohio State because of who they've played, but certainly if you're playing good football against lesser opponents, it's still good football. So I think, you know, it's going to be tough. I think this is a game that comes down to execution and the team that makes the fewest mistakes. And really, I think, you know, if you've got a game that's, for all intents and purposes, going to decide the Big Ten East Division, is assuming that something bizarre doesn't happen down the road, you know, I think, again, the biggest compliment that you can give this game is the fact that, you know, we're not really going to know who's going to win until they actually play it. I think you probably could have guessed that Penn State would probably win 8 out of 10 times against Michigan, probably most of the times that they played these teams so far. But this one, it really is a toss-up, and I think that's what it will make it so exciting.
Finally, when you went into the media room, what was the mood in your opinion?
I think the mood was mostly there is not nearly enough space in here for all these people. No, I mean, I think, you know, there's no doubt that that there are a lot of interesting stories going on with this team, win or lose. But I know personally for the amount of time that I've spent watching Penn State football go up and down and up and down and up and down, and you just sort of get there's a certain, you get a little jaded and a little tired of seeing the same sorts of struggles year after year, and certainly the past 5 or 6 years have not entirely been Penn State's doing. But I think you know, at the end of the day, there's no doubt that a good Penn State football team is good for everyone who is covering it. So I think there is anticipation, if nothing else, for what this weekend holds, and whatever happens this weekend certainly will spill over into the narrative moving forward. So I think everyone's just looking forward to it, and I think everyone in that media room is just sort of glad we've got one more big game at least to deal with.
Ben, a pleasure. Thanks so much for your time.
Yep, thanks for having me, Steve.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you, the other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
If you're not insured with the Purdy Insurance Agency, you may not be getting the most out of your insurance coverage. Locally owned and family operated for over 90 years, the experienced team at Purdy will compare your rates and coverage among a number of nationally recognized insurers to make sure you're getting the most out of your insurance dollars. And once you join the Purdy family of customers, you'll experience service and claims handling that's second to none. Call 1-800-677-2478 to see what Purdy Insurance can do for you.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. The Purdys have served this valley for decades. Their outstanding service, their outstanding customer service has led their customers to having the best insurance coverage at the right price. That is Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. And I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Very pleased to be joined by the head football coach at Bucknell, who watched his team get a dramatic win Saturday at Lafayette, and that's Joe Susan. Joe, first of all, welcome. Great to hear from you. Congratulations on that one.
Thank you, Steve. It's a walk-off. You know, sometimes it applies to more than just one sport. And a young man that made the play was in the right position to make the play. And once he got by the first level of the pursuit I knew that the next level was going to be offensive linemen, and I know they weren't going to catch him. I just kept looking for flags because you never know on any turnover.
Yeah, that's always the issue. Yeah, you're looking for a flag on that every single time. But you know what? You've watched the tape of it, and on the tape, you and I both know one of the keys to playing defensive back in college is that you have to see it and believe it. Is that something you can see right away in the tape that he saw and he believed it right away?
No question. They had two receivers to the field, two receivers into the boundary, and the inside receiver ran an out and up. And actually, the safety, the strong safety, bit on the out fake. But Colin, his receiver, ran an inside breaking route, so everything happened in front of him. He saw it, and he overlapped the route that they threw to, and made a great play on the ball, and then made a great play down the sideline. He's genuinely fast. When we return interceptions, it's actually a play that we run. They know that they bring it up the near sideline. They know who's responsible for blocking the intended receiver. They know who's responsible for blocking the quarterback. Actually, the quarterback laid down for a while. Otherwise, he would have been sooner to get the pursuit. And then he basically had a convoy down the sideline of white shirts, and I was watching for flags, and I was watching his feet stay in bounds, and those are both good things when there are no flags and his feet stayed in bounds the whole way.
The defense throughout the course of the entire game, Joe, I mean, they ended up giving up only 3 yards a play. I mean, 186 yards on 62 plays. What are you seeing from the cohesiveness of that unit at each level?
You know, it's the ability for people at all levels of the defense, the front, the linebackers, and the secondary, to step up when they have to make plays and make plays. And there was a third and one earlier in the game that Mark Piles made an outstanding play. There was a third and five where we were in a man coverage, and Ben Richard had to come all the way across. The back went in motion. He was covering the back. The back went in motion. He came all the way across. They completed the pass, but they needed six. They got three. And it's those things that really let me know that our defense is playing the way, number one, we want them to play. When we go into any game, we have a goal of limiting missed tackles to an overall 9, all right? And this week was probably one of our best weeks because we only missed 7 tackles. You know, obviously, that's 7 too many, but you're playing against pretty good personnel. And the other thing we did is we kept the field long for them. Both punters had outstanding days. I think our guy averaged 42.5 and their guy averaged 41.1. And I'm not sure many notice it because we really didn't do very well offensively. But we got the ball in the early part of the fourth quarter, 9 minutes left, on the -5. And we drove it, and we ultimately had a field goal that was tipped. And when we gave the ball back to them, there was a minute and 22 seconds left on the clock, and they had used their timeouts. And obviously you like to make that kick and wind up defending from there, but our defense really stepped up to the plate, and the kids have a lot of confidence right now. Our offense, we played against a real good team defensively. They had done some things that they hadn't done consistently in the past in terms of their pressure, but if I'm a defensive coach, I'm coaching against a young offensive line, that's what I'm doing. I'm going to challenge them with pressure, and it's odd to be in a overtime game where you don't take a snap on offense, but I'll take it that way.
That's not a problem at all because you got on the happy bus. When you have defense and special teams, it gives you a chance in every game. Are you evolving in that direction with those two units?
You know, it's funny because some of my offensive coaches, because they're aggressive, get upset with me when I nix certain things. And most of those things are related to field position. and playing to our strengths. And right now, our strengths are our ability to stop people defensively and our ability to keep the field long with our punter. And he's a weapon because we punted once where we're on like the 36, 37 yard line. And he has it down to a science where he's got that end over end kick that always bounces sideways, and it's usually bouncing to one of our guys, and we put him down at 2 yard line. The longer a field, just from a percentage standpoint, the harder for an opponent to score. Plus, it maintains a field position advantage for our offense. We're doing really well on our kickoffs. Obviously, you got to make the points you have. You have the opportunities to make in terms of PAT and field goal. And as our offense, you know, our offense is based. The effectiveness of our offense is going to be based on how our offensive line does and how our quarterback executes. And both those things are tied together. And you know, I think that from an offensive standpoint, we learned a lot about, you know, how to handle the pressure. And I think our quarterback will respond against a real good Colgate team this week with a better game.
Now, but there's another part to it as well. In a field position game like this was, if your offense can get a few first downs for you, they can then help change the field position just by getting some first downs. Did a guy like, for example, Chad Freshnock had to do more for you this week,
right,
in the running game? What kind of tough, hard-earned yards did he give you?
He is a hard, strong, and physical runner. He actually jumped over a guy, which is an oddity for a 220-pound back. But, you know, nobody wants to take him on high. They're going to try and cut tackle him, and that's probably what I would do if I were going to try and tackle a 220-pounder. But I think Chad really did a good job. And then we had our freshman, Marquise Carter, who really ran hard, and he's going to get better and better as he gets game experience. He made two very good plays on screen passes. One screen pass we ran against straight blitz coverage, and John Schlonzio made a great play in getting him the football, but he also made the play in advancing it to get a first down, which continued that drive that ate up over 7 minutes and 30 seconds. It's team football, and I tell these guys, whatever it takes. And when you look at the win, it's a win, and you know, use another baseball analogy, it's a line drive in the book. And gives us momentum into the next thing. They know what they're up against in terms of playing against a well-coached and very physical Colgate team. And just excited to have the opportunity. One of the things that's important to football at this level is to be able to play games late in the season that mean something in the standings. And, you know, we're that one game at a time mentality. I think our kids have done an outstanding job of maintaining that, but they know what's ahead of them. And I made the analogy, most of them have never played real pool. All right, they probably play it virtually on their internet stuff, but part of being a good pool guy, and I grew up in some of the alleys, in the bowling alleys in New Jersey, where the pool tables, you know, you'd find a way to rig it so you really didn't have to pay the quarter. But you learn that sport. You're always trying to set up the next shot with the shot
that's
you're taking,
right.
And that's what I kept telling them, you know. And as you keep making shots, there's less and less balls on the field, and every game becomes more and more important.
Exactly right. The great Willie Moscone always said, "I never once took a shot to make the shot. I was always taking a shot to set up the next shot."
No question.
You're facing a team in Colgate that, even in defeat, has rung up points, 38 against Lehigh. And they lost that game, 41-38. Beat Fordham, beat Holy Cross. What is it about their offense that right away you need to respect?
The thing that Dan Hunt does with that team is, and it's been consistent since I've started playing Colgate back when I got back here, it seems like they clone people. Their quarterback's a freshman, but he was both Offensive Player of the Week and Rookie of the Week this week, Grant Brenneman. He does what they ask him to do, and he does it very well. They're a multiple-option team, and it's really an upside-down option. It's not the traditional Navy, you know, double-slot option. They're reading a variety of different reads They're reading the defensive end. They're reading a defensive tackle. They might be reading a backer that's off the ball. He does that very well. And the thing that I think that he does and will continue to get better with is he pushes the ball down the field, and he's smart with the ball. So from a balance standpoint, their offense is very balanced, and I think that it's tribute to obviously their players, but their coaches preparing them. And one of the things that is good for us is that we're used to it. We've seen that thing before, and we've always done well defensively against them. Our challenge is going to be we've got to score some points, because rarely do you get by winning a game when you didn't score any points on offense. And obviously our defense held Lafayette to 7. That would be great if we can hold Colgate to 7, but I don't think it's going to be that way. I think that team's got to score some points, and it's going to be a challenge for both offenses against two pretty good defenses.
Yet during the course of your game against Lafayette, and you referenced it, you had a 41-yard drive, 6 plays. You had a 35-yard drive, 8 plays, and then the 17-play, 69-yard drive. Should that tell your offensive people that, you know what, you have a chance to finish because you're showing signs that you've got it?
Exactly, and they've got to understand that, and that's what we talk about all the time. We talk about finishing. But a big part of finishing is being able to execute it the right way on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, and carrying that over. And sometimes when a younger group meets with success, like the success we had against Cornell, they think, okay, we're pretty good right now. And I'm actually going to talk to them about Tom Brady. Tom Brady doesn't think that way. Number one, he knows he's good, but he prepares like he's a rookie. And that's how we got to prepare. And we've got to be able to take that preparation out onto the field. And I believe that our team will respond that way, knowing what they have the opportunity to do. And, you know, understanding that we've been telling them the truth all the time, that we control our own destiny. And it's not just coach speak. It's for real.
And see, that's the important part. That you control your own destiny. You determine where you're going. Those players in your room are going to determine where you're going. And as for Brady, being around Bill O'Brien for a couple of years like I was, I got a pretty decent read from Bill about what it was like to be around Brady. Brady acted as if every game was really important and that he could not miss a single detail. He never has ever felt like he, quote, had it in the bag.
That is correct. And I spent some time with another guy who was around Brady. He said, that's his team. He coaches every position on that team, and everybody knows that's his team. And they might be the defensive back. They might be the left tackle. But that's what it's got to be. It's got to be that guy that everybody's looking to, and everybody trusts that he's going to put you in the right position to make plays. And, the ability to prepare is something you can do more than your opponent does. And I think that's an important part about being successful in a league where there's a great deal of parity. And we keep preaching that, but preaching it and doing it sometimes are two different things. And we have a great bunch of young people on our team, and for them to take us to the steps we need to take, they've got to really apply themselves this week. And what we've done from an offensive standpoint really simplify the game plan. We know where Colgate's going to be. That's one thing that I give the Colgate coaches very high credit for, is they play their defense. You know they're going to play their defense, and they're going to play it well.
Joe, an absolute pleasure. Congrats on the last couple of weeks. I know you're already focused on the next one, and we wish you nothing but the best of luck with that.
Thank you, Steve. I appreciate it. Must have been fun at the whiteout the other night, huh?
Oh, it was a lot of fun. There's no question about that. But it's amazing. Well, I was back in my house at about 12:30 to 1 in the morning, and guess what I was doing at 7:30?
Getting ready for the next one.
Exactly.
Me too. You got it. Those 24-hour rules don't apply to us, do they?
No. we got about a 42-minute rule the other night.
Amen.
And got to about midnight, started thinking about the next one, got some sleep, started working on it. You probably were working on it on the bus coming back from Lafayette.
I was. And
no,
I will
surprise.
Not lie. I thank you. You guys have a great day.
Thank you, Joe.
Take care. Bye.
Joe Susan, head football coach at Bucknell. Next half hour, Sean McDonough is going to join us. And then Matt Leon on Monday Night Football coming up as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by our good friends at Purdy Insurance. Eagles and Redskins coming up tonight, which you'll hear on Eagle 107 this evening with Merrill Reese and Mike Quick. Eagles are the only 5-1 team in the NFL right now, and they'll take on the Redskins looking for a season sweep over Washington. Redskins had beaten the Eagles five consecutive times until the Eagles won the opener 30-17 in Landover. Now the rematch tonight at the Link. Sean McDonough will call the game tonight on ESPN with John Gruden, and we'll have him on in the next half hour. Matt Leon in the final half hour as well. Penn State football Saturday, they will take on Ohio State. 3:30 will be the kickoff. 2 o'clock will be the airtime. If you're wondering about the Michigan State game in East Lansing, it's either going to be noon or 3:30. They will not determine that until Sunday. So Michigan State will either be noon or 3:30. It will not be a night game. It'll either be noon or 3:30. And they will determine on Sunday. First things first, Ohio State, after Penn State won 42-13 over Michigan, and Ohio State had its bye week. Paul Keels, by the way, the play-by-play voice of Ohio State football, will join us later in the week to talk about that game. Also get a couple of beat writers on as well to discuss what's going on. Neil Coulong will join us on tomorrow's show to talk about the Steelers, who suddenly have themselves become a dominant team of late. Ben Roethlisberger has settled back in and looks a lot better and more comfortable at quarterback than he did a couple of weeks ago. The World Series feels like you're watching a National League game. The Astros and the Dodgers. Astros have not been, well, the Astros have been back in the American League, what, 3 years now?
Something like that, three or 4 years.
So they become, let's see, they become the first team ever to represent each league in the World Series.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think
because the Brewers haven't done it. The Brewers in the American League, they haven't made the World Series.
That's true.
In the National League.
Absolutely. Yep.
Now they're all depressed. They have to go to Los Angeles. No DH.
Yeah, it's a big disadvantage for that team.
It is a problem. But they have been the two best teams all season.
The first time since, I think it's 73 or something, where two teams over 100 wins will go at it in the World Series. 73, 74, something like mid-70s sometime. I'll get the exact date. But
so there you are. They're facing each other. You know, the irony is that both teams slumped in August and into early September. But I pointed out when the playoffs began, I said, do you realize that which two teams had the best record the final 10 games of the season? They were both 8-2. It was the Dodgers and the Astros.
Yep.
And because they had already clinched, it went under the radar that suddenly they had recaptured their form.
The proverbial flipping of the switch.
We'll flip a switch now.
You're listening to News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury. You can hear us anywhere in the world with the Sunbury Broadcasting Corporation app.